Falcoholic Podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. This is your host, Kevin Knight, reminding you to check out the show live on YouTube on Wednesday nights at 8:10 p.m. Eastern. We also encourage you to check out our Patreon page, where you can unlock exclusive perks, including access to a patron Q&A session where we take Falcons questions for about 30 minutes to an hour. That's a lot of fun. You can find that page at patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 157 of the Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight, joined by my co-host, Adnan Ikic, and a very special guest. He is Andrew Hirsch at Andrew Hirsch on Twitter. Very easy to remember. Appreciate that. Andrew is formerly of the AtlantaFalcons.com media team and also of the Falcoholic, for those that don't know. Andrew, been a long time since we've seen you around. I know you've been doing a lot of cool stuff, and this is your first appearance on live, so welcome. How are you doing tonight?
I appreciate that. It's great to be here. Doing very well tonight. You know, I'm a huge fan of the work you guys have been doing, and I don't bias because I worked with Dave and DW and unfortunately Matt Chambers, Gina Thomas as well, for a while back in the kind of those rough days. I think I was around there for the 2012 season, but after that a lot of rough times. But it's you guys do such a great job building that online community. And for me, I think a lot of us that are involved with Falcoholic or have been living outside of Atlanta for a good portion of our lives. So it's so cool to see it go from those message boards in the early 2000s to something as big as it is now. And I think you guys are a huge reason for that. So it's great to be here.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It's nice to have you back on. Well, on for the first time back with the crew. I know Dave wasn't able to be here, but we'll have to make sure to set up another time where you guys can get together. But appreciate you coming on. Also, like I said, with us, Adnan Ikic. Adnan, how are you doing this evening?
I was actually doing very well today. And then I read something about our 20-year-old tight end who was the fourth overall draft pick being too tired to run a play in the red zone on the first drive of the season. So, you know, that kind of brought my mood down a little bit, but you know, it's the Falcons. What can you expect?
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that he was like, they were checking him out for an injury because only because Arthur Smith seems to like never admit when a player is injured, unless he's like contractually obligated to do so. Like, he hid Matt Gono's, like, surgery for, what, 6 months or something like that. So, I mean, that's just kind of his style. So that's what I'm going to go with. But if it's not that, you know, there's not really any good answers for that. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that for sure. You know, obviously the red zone woes were a big story from the Falcons' week one shellacking at the hands of the Eagles. 32-6 was the final score there. Not great. Joining us to talk about how not great it was, we have with us now Eric Robinson, Mr. ESPN at @Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
We're good. We're good. We got a full house here with Andrew Hirsch joining us as well. So, guys, we got a jam-packed show for you. But, tough game. Offense, obviously, nowhere near what people were hoping for. Defense, I thought, probably did as best as they could be expected to do when they had to basically play the entire second half and were given no help whatsoever by the offense. We're going to get into it, guys. We'll talk about all that stuff. We will also get to the upcoming game on Sunday, which would be against the Bucks, which probably not going to be, you know, much easier, I guess we'll say. So let's get going talking about what happened in week one. There's obviously a lot to get to. Adnan and I talked about it at length after the game, so I'll open it up to you guys first. Andrew, I guess for you, what was the biggest issue that you saw in terms of the team in general? I mean, it could be anything, just the thing that stood out to the most to you from this one.
Yeah, I think for me it was the pass blocking for sure. You know, Jake Matthews was solid. Chris Lynchum was solid as well. But beyond that, it was rough. And I know it's people have had a lot of fun at, you know, Mayfield's expense over the last few days. And I think this game could go down as the Mayfield game, is what we remember it as. But, you know, to be honest, when I think like long term about the Falcons, where they are right now in 2021, I'm more concerned about Hennessy's play and McGarry's play than I was about, you know, anything that happened over at left guard. You know, Hennessy's supposed to be the heir to Alex Mack. McGarry was drafted in the first round a few years ago. He's not a rookie anymore. Of course, he's dealt with some injuries, but and they both had rough games too. And Mayfield is what, like the third option. It was Gonneau got hurt, and then Andrews got hurt, and then he was thrown in there. It's not his natural position. He's a right tackle in college. So for me, you know, obviously it was a brutal situation for him. And I do feel for him in dealing with all of the fan hate and the jokes at his expense. But I'm more concerned about center and right tackle, to be honest, because they struggled. And I haven't had a chance to watch the full game back yet. Hayden Hurst had a really rough game when it came to blocking. Obviously, Kyle Pitts is not going to be relied on as a blocker a whole lot. I don't think Lee Smith did anything particularly noteworthy either. So, yeah, that's, you know, for me, the number one thing by far.
Yeah, I mean, the pass blocking was kind of the blinking red light telling you that the car is shutting down, because the offense got to the point where the offense wasn't functional, period. And it wasn't that bad the whole game. I mean, obviously the first two sort of scripted drives, the offense was great until it really mattered in the red zone, and then it sort of fell apart. You know, I know fans mentioned and Adnan mentioned that Kyle Pitts wasn't in on any of the red zone plays this week, which obviously is puzzling. You know, you have to think that was perhaps an injury-related thing. He ended up coming back, obviously, but, you know, was it an injury-related thing? Was it a conditioning thing? Was it he's just not ready to play thing? I mean, obviously none of those things are good, the injury being the only sort of excusable one. We're never going to know the answer, so, you know, we can kind of just gloss over that. But, yeah, I agree with you. The pass blocking is a big concern, and it's like, it was expected for Mayfield, right? I mean, I think nobody was really expecting him to have a good game. I don't think anyone was expecting him to have a 1.4 pass blocking grade. I was not aware that was possible to have that.
No, I didn't think it went that low.
No. And Hennessy obviously didn't have a great one either. I thought Hennessy was mostly okay. But I mean, that's just comparing him to Jalen Mayfield, which maybe isn't fair either. And then Caleb McGarry is another big area of concern, right? Because he was, I think, the third worst graded player on the whole offense. And as a first round pick going into his third season, you expect growth there, and he was a big concern as well.
I was gonna say Caleb McGarry is the one that you and I talked about it at length in those training camp videos, that this is the year for him. Like, he's at that bit of a crossroads in his career where he really has to take that next step, because if he continues giving what we saw the last 2 years, like, the Falcons will have to start looking very, very closely at replacing him at right tackle. And this is a team that has so many holes on offense and on defense that, you know, you can't just it's not ideal to use another high premium draft pick on a tackle, which is what you'll have to use to, you know, get a tackle in today's NFL after you've already used one of those just 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's obviously not what you would want, considering that you need those high draft picks to fill all the other numerous holes on your roster. You know, maybe they're hoping that Matt Gono will come in and provide that sort of stability that McGarry has lacked, but this is a big year for McGarry.
The thing with that is they may not have to look far. Their right tackle replacement may actually be on the field. He just may be playing a different position right now. That's the thing. That's the interesting thing about it. You know, we talked about it on last episode, like, and we talked about it numerous times this offseason. You know, Mayfield's going to struggle. He's going to have his hurdles. That's the way the game plays. And you know, you look at the interior defensive linemen that they have at the beginning of the schedule. We pointed it out once the schedule came out, that the offensive line is going to have some major tests to start the season. And it doesn't get any better with Villavea and Dominican Sue next week. Yeah. And it's not going to get any better with Deron Payne and John Allen in a couple weeks. He has some tests in front of him. The one thing that stood out to me is the fact that Philly didn't really do anything exotic on defense.
Right.
And yet they still could not find a rhythm. I mean, it's largely in part because Matt had really very little time to do anything. But, you know, that's concerning. You know, how is this offense going to adjust to that? They're playing a Bucs defense that's going to throw everything at them next week. So they're going to have to figure something out really quick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Eagles got as much pressure as they wanted rushing four.
Right.
And that made it so much harder everywhere else because there was no, you know, there's no need for them to blitz or be aggressive. They could kind of just rush four, drop guys in coverage, and then, you know.
Must be nice, right?
Yeah, that must be nice. I know Dan Quinn's like up there smiling. Like, that's what it's supposed to look like, you know. It's pretty hard to get that, you know, when your pass rush is terrible. But the Eagles' pass rush, not terrible. They were the number two pass rush last year. Obviously, they looked like they're going to be in contention for, you know, the top pass rush once again this year. But yeah, I mean, it was so bad that the offense was sort of limited. I mean, it was basically we were down to sort of quick passes and running the ball. And maybe that would be okay in some scenarios, like early in the game, that's fine. But when you're down 2+ scores, that doesn't work so well. And it got to the point, you know, Ryan got sacked on consecutive fourth downs, and it's like any time he had to take more than like a 2-step drop before he threw the ball, it was just a sack. So obviously that can't continue. Evan Birchfield joining us now as well, director of guest personnel. Evan, we're talking about the offensive line struggles. Did you have anything you wanted to add on that particularly sour note from Sunday?
Not really. I was hoping I missed that part.
No, yeah. That's going to be like half the show. We still got like 20 minutes on offensive line, I think.
Yeah, so. Evan, you got to come in an hour later to miss that part.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I haven't been listening because I just got here. But I imagine you guys handled that well. It was about as bad as you could get, at least from the left guard standpoint. I'm sure you mentioned his Jalen Mayfield's PFF grade pass blocking of 1.4 or whatever it was, which
very low GPA. Very
yeah,
bad GPA.
I said on Twitter, like, I didn't even know they could go that low.
Right, but, I didn't know either.
I mean, what's funny about it on the post game podcast that we recorded the same time you and Anand did this on Sunday, DW was like, Evan, I think it's going to be like 1 point something or like one something. And then sure enough, it ended up being exactly that. Yeah, so that's pretty bad. And he's listed on the depth chart as the starter going into it. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I know Drew Dahlman is considered the backup, which was interesting. Ahead of, I guess, Gassot isn't ready. So, you know.
And you mentioned Drew Dahlman. While he only had 9 total snaps, his pass blocking grade was a 73.1, which, you know, is much higher than a 1 point, 1.4.
Yeah.
70 points higher, in fact. He's an entire, above-average starter better. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's nice to see Dahlman perform well. It's only 9 snaps, so it's like, okay, we can't really say too much about that, but certainly Dahlman wasn't a liability while in there. The only thing he did was, of course, commit a false start. I feel like everyone who stepped in to play left guard committed false starts, which was not great. Andrew, did you have something you want to add to?
Well, I just think that all of these issues are compounded by the fact that this was the first time in a game setting that this offense was together and working. And, you know, we can argue and discuss all night about whether or not that Matt Ryan and some of the other guys should have played during preseason, but you're going up against a great pass rush. You've got a really shaky offensive line. Your number one wide receiver from last year is gone. You've got a rookie tight end with high expectations, but he's still a rookie in his first game. And you've got a whole new playbook for your veteran quarterback. You know, Matt Ryan doesn't matter how cerebral you are, you know, and how seasoned you are as a quarterback. It's still a brand new system and you're still trying to get the timing down right. So it was just all these issues kind of layered on top of each other. And I think that's what led to two field goals, and nothing else.
Yeah, but I did definitely have a problem with not going for it on that first fourth down from the three. That was a big issue. But yeah, go ahead, Anand.
I was going to say I fully agree with everything Andrew said, but the good news is, you know, the Falcons are playing for a fan base that's very rational, isn't prone to overreaction, and, you know, is very, very level-headed.
Yes.
Well, one thing I remember is in the 2016 preseason, the offense came out a few times at the Dome. I remember being there covering that game and just looked putrid, just horrendous. And people were freaking out. They're thinking, oh, this is just like the big collapse from 2015 after starting 5-0 and limping to the finish. And, you know, they pulled it together pretty well that year. One of the highest scoring offense of all time. Obviously, that's not going to be the case this year. But you know, this kind of pardon.
I remember the Bucks game, the season opener.
Horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, people were ready to drive Shanahan out of town after that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had, if I had missed like the last few games of the 2015 season, you showed me that team. It's like, yeah, that was a 2015 offense right there. And so, you know, these things take time, especially when it's a new system. You're relying, you know, Calvin Ridley, as talented as he is, the pressure's on him now as the number one guy. He doesn't have two defensive backs covering someone on the other side of the field anymore.
No,
there's a lot at play here that's just gonna take time. And I think, you know, Falcons fans, you know, I consider myself, I'm not the most patient sports fan in general as someone from Atlanta, but this is the kind of thing that will require some patience, and it's gonna be tough for a while. But that's the nature of how things go in this league.
Yeah. I think they opened themselves up to this too by insisting every time it was brought up that no, we're competing right now, like this is not a rebuild and all that. And like no one, like I'm not saying we should expect them to say like, oh yeah, we're gonna be bad. Like no one's gonna ever say that, but when you refuse to even acknowledge the chance that like we might need to like, you know, sort of like this might be kind of a bridge year, you know, we're gonna be as competitive as we can while we, you know, retool the roster and this sort of thing. It's like, no, we're competing right now. Like, okay, then that's what fans are gonna expect. So
I get that.
Also part of it. I mean, also I get the other side of it, which is what are you supposed to say? But you know.
I get that. But also I have a hard time just looking at this roster from top to bottom and say they're actually rebuilding. Because rebuilding rosters have a former MVP at quarterback? You know, a former All-Pro left tackle, a guy like Grady Jarrett, a guy like DeAndre, like they still have building blocks.
Yes.
I mean, if it was rebuilding, they would have just stripped this thing all the way down, but they didn't.
Right.
I don't think they were able to, given the financial ramifications.
Right. They were not able to, but at the same, so even if that is the case, even with them coming into the season, I still find it hard to sit here and say they are rebuilding. Now, I do agree with you when you say about the whole, you know, we're competing type thing. Okay. All right. If you want to say that, but I don't mind him saying we're not rebuilding. Cause I think it's enough pieces here moving forward.
And he also said, you know, when asking if you're gonna be competitive, it's first year as a GM, you're not going to say no.
Oh yeah. No, we're going to be terrible.
People don't really talk, other than us who, you know, kind of obsess over the stuff to an unhealthy level. We think about those comments. Most people are not going to pay attention if the new GM says, yeah, I want to be competitive. He says no. That's a lot of unnecessary headaches and flowery brand.
Right.
But I think also, you know, Fondon said a few days before opening day that even though the 53 roster was set by the day of the final cuts, there were still going to be a lot of change to the roster over the course of the season.
Yeah.
That to me is almost like a wink. Like we know we are not where we need to be. There's still going to be a lot that gets ironed out from between now and January.
Yeah, I agree. Let me take a quick break here to get some of these donations, and we appreciate everyone for donating. Thank you guys so much. If you're interested in doing that, you want to get your question or comment read, the link to that's in the show description, or you can type !tip in the chat, and then it will show you the link as well. So I think that should be set up correctly if anybody wants to test that out. But we got Brandon Brass, who tipped $5 just before we went live. Brandon, if you have a comment, we didn't get it, so throw that in the chat if you did, and I'll try to read that off at a later point. But thank you for your $5, man. We also have Michael Zurich with the dollar. Michael, thank you so much. He says, this is a sad one. I remember seeing this one come up. He says, if it makes anyone feel any better, after being a Falcons fan living in Chicago, I waited from 2003 until now to finally make it to a Falcons home game, my childhood dream. This week one was the game I finally got to, not how my 5-year-old self imagined it. Yeah, that's a rough one, buddy. Sorry that was the game you got to see. I hope you got to enjoy the stadium, at least. It is a really cool, really nice stadium. So hopefully at least you got to enjoy that aspect of it. But yeah, that's a rough one. Then we got a $5 from Corey Carter. Corey, thank you, man. We appreciate you. He says, the most concerning thing from Sunday's game to me was the schematic issues when it came to blocking and personnel sets. We're starting to worry that Smith may not be the answer, but hoping I'm wrong. Week one is early to admit he didn't have his team ready to play. Yeah, I mean, obviously not a great sign. Yeah.
You've given up on Arthur Smith already after one game?
Well, I think he's saying, like, he's hoping that he's wrong. So I think he's saying he's concerned. But yeah,
no,
I agree, Adnan. I fire everyone. You know, if we just fire everyone every week, eventually we have to find the right coaching staff, right? I mean, eventually. Someone's going to win sometime. So,
yeah. I can't argue with that logic.
I've heard that. I've heard the questioning of drafting Kyle Pitts after week one. I'm like, it's one game, guys. Like, come on. What are we doing here?
I can't believe George Costanza was wrong.
George Costanza led us astray. Where is George to defend himself?
He disappeared too, didn't he?
It's not a coincidence we're not seeing George.
Some people feel Dean Pease needs to go back into retirement.
Dean Pease did fine. We're going to get to the defense, but I wouldn't be upset at Dean Pease. Yeah.
Do you guys remember how much hype there was around Dan Quinn before even the first preseason game?
Yes.
Just the culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, he brought the team to the precipice of its first ever Super Bowl. I'm not going to knock Dan Quinn, but I'm just saying the way that we talk about coaches, especially in the early going, it's just we just don't know. We have no idea how Arthur Smith Senior is going to turn out. If you had told me at the start, I mean, there was Dan Quinn with the huge culture change. Season starts 5-0. I remember thinking this team's never going to lose again. Ever.
We thought it was Seattle Seahawks 2.0.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole brotherhood thing worked really well for a while. Yeah. And so you just never know with this league when it comes to head coaches, how long they're going to be effective, if they're going to be effective. I mean, the obvious example you go back to is Bill Belichick in Cleveland. You just have no idea. And I think there are some concerning things for sure in this game. I think some of the play calling, the comment that, you know, he made today regarding Pitts in the red zone is just not something I'm going to criticize him for, because we don't know if there's injury, but it's another one of those things that kind of raises your eyebrow a bit. But you look at the roster he's got, you look at the situation he's in, and you just, this is a slightly off topic here, but you're thinking about the pandemic cap and how, is there any team that's been more directly affected in the short term, right, by week one than that, where the Falcons were not able to get in a solid left guard, you know, in some form or fashion.
The Ravens.
Pardon me?
The Ravens.
Touche.
Yep. Yeah.
Very true.
No, I don't disagree.
I get what you're saying. Absolutely. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very disconcerting to see this sort of result, but I agree. Like, you can't draw any conclusions from one game for any coach. It's just not.
I do blame the talent more than anything. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, the running on 3rd and 10, like, I'm never going to be able to defend that. But it really goes back to the talent deficiency. Like, overall, this team is very, very top heavy in talent. Yeah. And then, like, beyond like the top, like, guys, it just, like, completely falls off a cliff. The last time that this team was this devoid of talent, in my opinion, it was that 2014 season where they played the Carolina Panthers in week 17. And, you know, they were alive for a playoff spot. And I just remember looking and thinking, this team is just 4 steps slower than the Panthers. That was the game where they lost 34-3. Yep. And I just remember thinking, there's no way that Thomas Dimitroff can, like, survive this. He like, put this terrible, terrible team, like, on the field. And, you know, it was fine, like, a few years earlier. But then when the wheels came off, they really came off. Dimitroff ended up staying. And, you know, I think that's the fault of Arthur Blank. And he once again put together a team that's completely devoid of talent in comparison to its peers. So, yeah, it's... I hope that we get a similar turnaround 2 years from now that we did from 2014 to 2016, but, you know, I don't know how feasible that is.
I think Sunday showed that. You know, I've always felt like this team was hovering around, you know, that mediocrity, that 9-8, 8-9 record or whatever. But, you know, I think Sunday showed that the talent is really, you know, is really somewhat of a drop off in several positions.
Yeah,
you know, and like you said, we're gonna get to the defensive side of the ball. That's pretty much where my
get there. Yeah, was. Yeah. For the defense, I think everyone was, like, ready to temper expectations and weren't really expecting a ton out of them. But with the offense, that was what was unexpected, because, I mean, I think the main concern for us going into it was, like, can the offensive line just be good enough so that the offense could function? And obviously the answer was no this week. But with the defense, it was like, okay, we just needed to make a couple stops here and there and maybe it'll be okay. And, like, I think, to be fair to them, they did. Like, they made several key fourth down stops, even in the third quarter when the offense had been lifeless for, you know, multiple quarters at that point. They still got a few stops, and it wasn't out of reach really until, you know, midway through the third, into the fourth quarter where stuff just started to get out of control. I mean, the Falcons, as bad as the final score ended up being, it was still, you know, 15-6 at, you know, partway through the third quarter. So, you know, it wasn't like this game was totally out of control. It just went from, like, okay, we're down a score, we really need a touchdown here, to, oh my God, it's 32-6. Like, it just that quick, and they just couldn't get it together. Obviously, that's sad, but I wouldn't be blaming the defense. But let me go ahead and get to a few more of these donations before I forget about them, because I don't want to keep you guys waiting too long before we move on to some defensive talk here. Guy Fieri, a.k.a. Solaire, with the $1. Thank you, Solaire. We appreciate that, man. He said, felt like the opening game of 2019 all over again, Falcons versus Vikings. Yeah, that's honestly what I thought of, too, a little bit. Only positive I could take away was first drive. At least the play calling was no longer boomer football. Just wish they brought in a guard after what we saw in the preseason. 0-2, here we come. Yeah, and I don't even think that's really being negative. I think that's just being realistic. It's probably not going to be a big turnaround. Ken Ballard with the $100 tip. Oh my God, what a legend. All right, I'll get to you in a second, Ken. Sorry, I got a couple more to read off. Total legend. That is a new record, folks. So give Ken Ballard.
He's getting some Dave meat.
He's unlocked the next tier there. So
he didn't make for that to be a dollar, and he just got a little happy with the decimal.
I mean, you know, if you know, let me know, Ken, if it got a little exciting there. But yeah, I mean, we appreciate it. Definitely.
He was $99 back. He meant to give
it. Yeah, I got to make sure I really read that one with some enthusiasm to justify that. But no, we really appreciate that, Ken. Thank you so much. Next up, George Costanza. Heard us talking about him. He's here, guys. It's George with the $3. Thank you, George. We appreciate that, man. He says, if we're picking in the top five again next year, we really may have to adjust course. This team just wasn't ready to play. Team looked bad. Went from thinking 13-4, probably a little aggressive, you know, in my opinion, George, to 1-16. Also, I think a little aggressive.
And he says, it can also, be in the middle. It doesn't have to be like either end of the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I understand.
Like, you know, 5-6 wins.
I understand.
You know?
But and he says, oh, Pitts is awesome. Pitts will be fine. Just wait. Yeah. No disagreement there, George. But yeah, settle at 500.
George,
yeah.
we were just kidding earlier. Like, Pitts will be fine. It's been one game. I was tampering expectations in preseason. I was telling everyone, all right, like, don't expect 1,200 yards from a rookie tight end. Like, 700-800 yards, that would be an amazing season for a rookie tight end.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Pitts still has so much time to realize his potential. I'm not willing to make any judgments on any rookie after one game. Particularly when the whole offense sort of looked terrible. So don't blame him for that at all. And then George with another three right after that. Also dishing on the Richie Grant pick again. He says, with the 40th pick, Falcons select a backup safety. Falcons always going to Falcons. Yeah. And again, George, I'm saying not going to judge a rookie by their first game, so won't comment. But, you know, I did tweet, you know, it's time to reignite, you know, the Justin Fields versus Kyle Pitts. That's tired. Richie Grant versus Creed Humphrey, that's wired. So that's where we're going next. You know? And then we got just two more tips before we get back to the conversation. Thank you guys so much for all the love. We do appreciate that.
If Richie Grant comes out this week in week two and he gets like a game-sealing interception on Tom Brady, I don't want to hear any of that, okay?
Right, right. Yep. We got Tom K with the $3.
I promise you, if we beat the Bucs and Richie Grant gets a game-sealing interception, no matter how we beat them, this show will be a lot more positive next week, and so will the post-game show.
That guy might get the key to the city after the game. Something like that, man.
Yeah. All right, Tom K with the $3. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate that, man. Says, so the defense, while not great, did keep the team in the game till the fourth quarter. Would you say this is a positive sign or more the Eagles having a mediocre offense? I would say it's a positive sign, honestly. I mean, I think the defense played about as well as we could have hoped in this one, considering they got entirely hung out to dry from like the second quarter on. And I think that they weren't great. Certainly weren't great at defending Jalen Hurts when he ran the ball, but that's just kind of what they had to do to get pressure. You know, when you have to decide between blitzing and getting pressure or not blitzing and letting them throw all over you, Dean Pease was like, we're going to blitz. We're going to try to force a mistake. And the Eagles, to their credit, I think played a great game around that. You know, they threw a lot of those screens, a lot of quick outs, and let Jalen Hurts take off whenever he had a chance. And that was the perfect strategy. against the Falcons defense. And that's just something that's going to happen when you can't get pressure with four.
I like a lot of their play calls where they try to get him perimeter runs with a lead blocker, like an H-back or a pulling guard or something like that. Just design run calls. Like that was smart. They tip of the cap to Sirianni and that Eagles offense. They played with strengths and showed. Yeah.
It did, for sure.
The issue is that's a very, very easy solution to beating a team like the Falcons who can't get any pass rush without blitzing. Because you can't just keep blitzing over and over again because, you know, they'll just throw some quick outs, they'll throw some screen passes. It's why, this is going back to that documentary that they did on SB Nation, the Falcons in 1977, the Grits Blitz, greatest defense statistically of all time. The next year, teams just realized, they're like, oh, we'll just like, you know, we'll throw these like quick little passes, and that completely dissolved and dissected the defense. You have to be able to generate a pass rush rushing for once in a while. I'm not saying you have to be like, you know, the 85 Bears with your four-man front or anything like that, but you have to be able to generate some pass rush without completely blitzing over and over again, or you're going to get destroyed by these genius offensive coordinators.
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially if they have the quarterback like Hurts to make it work. You know, it puts you in a bind, and I'm sure Pease would rather have the flexibility to do both, but as we all know, the Falcons edge group is probably the worst group on the roster. So
they forced Dean Pease out of his comfort zone, and because of the lack of pure athletes in the front seven for the Falcons, it forced them to try to defend something that they can't really defend right now. Because I mean, I don't think they have the guys that can go laterally back and forth with the Eagles offense like that, and that's what they did. They attacked that. So again, tip of the cap.
Yep. And then let me get to this legendary $100 tip from Ken Ballard. Thank you so much, man. That's very nice of you. He says, I've been watching the Falcons for over 50 years. The funniest line I've ever heard live regarding the Falcons was when Kevin Knight said during one of the preseason games, I assume, now that's how you throw a catchable ball after Franks threw that interception in the preseason. Yeah, that was a pretty good one. I'm glad someone enjoyed that because we didn't enjoy the games all that much. But we appreciated hanging out with you guys and enjoying what we could. And thanks again so much for that, Ken. We really appreciate that, man. Let's do transition to some more of that defensive talk. And Andrew, I'll let you kind of get your two cents in here. You know, how did you feel about the defensive performance? I mean, obviously allowing 32 points, not great. But when the Falcons, you know, give the Eagles the ball on their own territory on two consecutive fourth downs, that's, you know, probably not great either in terms of helping out the defense. So how do you feel about that side of the ball in this game?
Yeah, obviously disappointed by the lack of pressure up front. AJ Terrell looked great. And, you know, Fabian Moreau gave up that big play at the beginning.
He got picked, But
you know, he really settled down. And I think when you think about the kind of situation the Falcons are in or were in this past offseason, and you want to find those cost efficient veterans that you can slot in, you want the kind of guy who can get, you know, be blamed for a big touchdown early in a game and settle in and be solid for the rest. And I mean, for what he's being paid, that's pretty much all you can ask for at this point. One thing not directly related to what we saw, I think John Kaminsky had two snaps on defense the entire game.
Yeah. Not great.
I don't know what's going on. I was really high on him coming out of the draft. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping that, you know, this season with pass rush being such an issue and new defense, new coaches, another year of progression for him. It was disappointing to not see him out there. I'm sure there was a very good reason for that. But yeah, overall I would give it like a C+, B- type grade, definitely not indicative of the final score of the game. But you know, when you look at the way the offense had to get very predictable in the second half, and then they were just getting pummeled, and this is something we see all the time, the Falcons defense just gets exhausted.
Yep.
And there's no way to quantify how exhaustion plays into, you know, a team defense's performance. But when you look over the last 5+ years and these collapses the Falcons have and the blowouts they have, you just look at how gassed this defense is by the fourth quarter. It's a very common theme. And you know, when it comes to that, that's another just kind of ripple effect from the offensive line being as brutal as it was this game. And I thought the defense looked very solid in the first half. And then as they got tired and as Jalen Hurts really settled in, got a little rougher. But I was encouraged by a lot of what I saw considering the talent on the field. And definitely hope to see, you know, I would love to see John Kaminsky get more snaps. I'm excited to see some of these young guys, Jalen Hawkins. I thought he had some good plays. Isaiah Oliver had some good plays.
Yeah, in run support nice in particular. He made a couple of key tackles. Yeah,
he looked good. And he was flying around on special teams too. You know, Michael Walker was making some noise at certain points as well. So, you know, for me, I'm going to be looking at these younger guys a lot as the season moves on. Especially on defense. And, you know, I was encouraged by a lot of what I saw. I'm trying to, you know, think on the positive side here. But yeah, if we can get that front four moving, it'd be such a game changer. And it's a shame that Kaminsky hasn't been able to step up and be that guy. It's a shame that, you know, a lot of the draft picks have not panned out in that area specifically. And I think we're all, as Falcons fans who've watched this team for years, we're so tired of this issue. We're just exhausted every year of seeing the opposing quarterback having enough time to read War and Peace in the backfields before he throws the ball. and we're tired of seeing these guys with so much promise going back to, you know, even Jamal Anderson and Ray Edwards. It's just been ever since John Abraham left, man, we were spoiled for a while there. And it's going to happen again. It'll be very refreshing when the Falcons have a front four or can generate a really strong pass rush, but it's just not there right now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, I don't understand the John Kaminsky thing either. To me, I always thought it was, I always liked Kaminsky at edge. Like, I always thought that's what he played in college. That's what I wanted to see. They were very insistent about bulking him up a little bit and moving him to the interior, which if you look at his athletic testing, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's like a 99th percentile athlete for a defensive tackle at that point. But I thought maybe this year with how weak they are on the edge that they would give him more chances there, and it just never really panned out. So, you know, he's going to be a small defensive tackle. He's going to be a sort of a pass rusher only there, and that's going to limit his opportunities when he's got to play behind Grady Jarrett and Marlon Davidson, who also only had 20 snaps in the game. You know, it's just not great. You know, I think they really like Jonathan Bullard and they're playing him at kind of one of the interior spots too. But I would, you know, like to see something out of those young defensive linemen that they invested in over the years. Agree with you there. Eric, I'll go to you next on this one. What were some things that you liked or didn't like about the defense's performance on Sunday?
I'll be honest with you. I wasn't really a fan of it all. The fourth down stops were great.
That was nice to see. You know, at least they got them, right?
Yeah. That just plays a part. I mean, we see that every year. We're kind of sort of used to it now. Like, they're going to get a fourth down stop.
Elite on fourth down, yeah.
They got one.
If they could just get it there more often, yeah.
Right. Like, let every play be fourth down, and I guarantee you this would be the number one defense in the league. You know, I think Sunday really proved to me and maybe many others how, you know, this defense is in need of some true talent, man, especially in the front seven, especially on the defensive line. You know, they need some guys. Dean Pease is going to need some horses in order to put this game together, and there's only so much he can do as a play caller, you know, especially with this particular scheme. And you know, if you know his past, you know, he's played fairly well against Tom Brady in the past with this particular scheme. I don't know if he's going to have the guys to be able to execute that.
You guys heard it here first. The Falcons are shutting down the Bucs on Sunday, according to Eric Robinson.
I don't know if he has the horses to do that this time around. It's scary, man. The missed tackles kind of bugged me a little bit as the game went on. And a lot of it has to do with fatigue as well. But, you know, that's something that we kind of sort of saw from them last year, not being able to really, you know, make a play when a play is needed. Again, fourth down stops are great, but get off the field on third downs. Get a turnover. Something. Oh my God. And again, the pass rush.
I'm tired. It's year after year after year of this, and I'm like, my God, just give me one legitimate pass rusher. I don't need a plethora. We don't have to rotate them. I don't need a duo like what Cleveland has. Or
right.
Anything
there's
like
levels that. Of pass rushing competence. It doesn't have to go straight right. to Myles Garrett level. Like,
yeah, I don't have to have a pair of Bosas on the field at this. Just give me something. Good Lord. I just there's no one reliable right now where you know, if you need someone to put their hand in the ground and say, hey, see that guy right there? Go get him. I can't depend on anybody right now. And I kind of, you know, this they rolled the dice by going into the season and not addressing that in free agency, because in my opinion, they had the ability to go and possibly get a Justin Houston. They had the ability to go and get a Clay Matthews, but they chose not to. They said, we're going to ride with Dante Fowler and the guys. All right,
yeah, and they didn't really replace Barkevius Mingo after, you know, his whole saga.
But, in fairness, Fowler did change his number.
Well, that's cute.
Single digits, baby. Let's go.
Different number, same play. It doesn't mean it is what it is.
I will say the previous regime also kind of tied their hands with Fowler.
Yes.
Like, I don't think they, like, really could have. They got him to take a pay cut, and they put
a lot
of incentives.
More money. They saved more money by doing that.
Yeah.
But
when that happened, we loved that idea. Like, okay, you have a guy in here that wants to get paid. Make him earn that payday. I get that.
The opposite of Vic Beasley's contract.
Right. this regime looked at that contract and they looked at what he did last year and say, okay, we fixed the problem. Let's just take his money away from him and make it earn it back. No, like, I don't think that's the issue. Maybe Fowler is just not that elite of a pass rusher.
I think the thing with Fowler, and it was obvious to a lot of people, like, when they signed him, was, like, his best year was with the greatest defensive player in the NFL that they've seen in a long time.
The greatest DT of all time.
Right, and it wasn't like that was his only season. Like, he had several other seasons where he wasn't good. But
so
for some reason, we signed him to be John Abraham 2.0.
Right, so how do you not provide some type of insurance in some
like
way?
If the Falcons defense was magically good, I think Fowler would be good. I think he's just one of those players that if he's surrounded by, like, players who also aren't good, he's not going to be worth anything. Yeah. But if he's with dominant players, he can thrive because he's surrounded by great players. Like, who wouldn't be good?
And I thought that Fowler would be a lot better than he was because, you know, you're still putting him next to Grady Jarrett, who, while he's not Aaron Donald, is still a very elite defensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, top five at worst, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that Fowler would be, like, you know, he would step into that top pass rusher role and that he'd do fine. But he didn't. Like, he was terrible last year, and, you know, he was on his knees for a play.
Rams have some good talent aside from Donald, though. Clay Matthews, I think, still even got good sacks.
Yeah.
He was on his knees. I thought he was actually proposing to an offensive lineman at some point. Why are you on one knee, man, in the middle of a pass rush? But it's funny, going back to Evan's point, if you look at his career, his two best seasons were with Aaron Donald and the year the Jags made the AFC title game. Like, those were his. It's ironic Evan brings that point up. It's like, okay, does this guy, is he really, we're going to get the best of him when things around him are just at an elite level? Like, is that the type of guy he is? He plays up to, you know, he plays when he wants to play.
They're not going to be at an elite level in Atlanta, I'll tell you that.
We're not going to see the best of Dante Fowler. Again, what they did with his contract, I think, is genius. I think the previous regime kind of should have done something similar to that. But I don't like the fact that they made that move and they said, okay, he's fixed. We did that. We brought in DPs. He's going to figure it out. He's going to lead the way. I didn't like that idea. And again, drafting an edge rusher is one thing. You know, that might have their chance. Their plans might have changed with that, but they didn't do anything in free agency with the veterans. I would have loved to bring in Ryan Kerrigan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing, like, and that's what I wanted to get to, and I will get to that in just a second, just because I want to read some more tips, but don't let me forget, that's what we're talking about in terms of free agent additions.
You guys don't think Fowler is going to get his $4 million for getting 11.5 sacks this year? Is that a no? Silence a no?
No?
I think I have a better chance of making $4 million this year.
Eric's gonna take over first take or whatever.
I'll tell you what.
I will.
Yeah. Better chance of that happening.
I will say though, $4 million was on the line, man. I'd be living like in the gym. Man.
Oh yeah.
Every day. I'm getting that. I'm having a Chandler Jones type day before me.
Yeah. Let me call up Chuck Smith. Like, let me go move into his basement or something and just work on it with him every day.
Hello.
Hey, Chuck. What's up? Yeah. Shout out to Chuck Smith for coming on last week, by the way. But yeah, we got a $3 from Solaire, aka Guy Fieri, as well. He says, "Okay, that's it, guys. I'm declaring Dante Fowler as the official meme player for the Falcons this year. He's officially the new Vic Beasley. I will be calling him Falling Fowler from now on because he slips on every play." So okay, Solaire did say we needed to establish.
He's not even Vic Beasley because Vic Beasley got sacks. He's
at least
like
he got
Coy
like
Bierman.
15.5 sacks that one year. Yeah, so.
He did have that very memeable play where he tried to trip Teddy Bridgewater last year. That was very
great.
Funny.
Yeah, he like tried to karate kick him too. That was not the best way to pass rush. I don't know where he learned that technique. Definitely not from Chuck Smith. Speaking of Chuck Smith, but
any defensive coach, in
right?
History.
Yeah, anyone, anywhere, really. But we got another $2 from Jason Gaines. Arthur Smith said in his head coaching debut press conference, I quote, did a really poor job getting us ready to go. Well, no kidding. Maybe some preseason game reps would have helped. Also, I think we need to sign ex-Saints Vikings guard Nick Easton as our starting left guard. Yeah, I mean, Jason, I've been clamoring for Nick Easton for the entire offseason.
For months.
Right there with you, buddy. Yeah. And that's nothing. I mean, and I think they should give Jalen Mayfield more time, but I think they should have signed Nick Easton like weeks ago and then not forced Jalen Mayfield in week one. Now that we've done it, it's like, okay, well, we should probably just play it out now. But I mean, it's I think after Josh Andrews got hurt, and I don't support the plan of let's just start Josh Andrews either. I think that was also negligent. But, you know, Nick Easton being there would have made me feel a lot better. And then finally George, I'll get to yours in just a little bit, just because that's probably more going to be discussed a little bit later in the show. But George did come in with another $3, so we'll get to that one in just a minute. But speaking of free agent signings, obviously left guard was one we kind of all clamored for, never really panned out. Pass rusher was another one, and that's to me why I had a hard time really buying this sort of we're going to compete right now vibe, because they built the roster like they were planning to compete in 23. Like, a bunch of one-year deals, trying to spend as little as possible, and a lot of that's due to the financial situation. Even if they wanted to spend, they couldn't have exactly spent on more than like a guy or two. And you know, the kind of just filling out the roster with these sort of fringe players and in depth guys just to kind of get to 53 while staying under the cap. And we didn't really see them make any moves in the preseason based on what they saw. I think we were like, oh, they've got this money. They could do, you know, X, Y, and Z depending on what happens. And they, even after Josh Andrews got hurt, they didn't make a move at guard. So unless you count claiming Colby Gossett, which I don't count that. So, you know, it's just a little bit puzzling to me because I don't agree with, as much as I like Jalen Mayfield and think he very well could be our future left guard, I think basically throwing him everywhere on the offensive line throughout training camp due to injuries and then thrusting him into the week one lineup when he's barely played any snaps at all at guard in his entire career. We were kind of asking for this. And I would have just hoped that we could have taken another step before subjecting the fan base to this experience. But, you know, it's kind of where they are with their financial situation.
I don't want to label them with this term, but it's complacency, man. And complacency is what hurt the last regime. They thought that things were just going to figure themselves out over time. They just needed to make the right tweaks here and there, and things are going to be fine. And I don't know how many other signs do you need. And trying to swallow that pill that they saw this offensive line throughout the entire offseason.
They hit it on the far side of freaking training camp, so we couldn't see it.
And they looked at it and they saw the circumstances approaching the season with Josh Andrews getting hurt and Mayfield being inconsistent and said, you know what? Let's go on a week one against Fletcher Cox with this crew. Like, we're not going to do really anything at all? Okay.
Yeah, but imagine if it had worked.
Then he would have been a genius. So,
I had a hard time imagining that going into the pre. Like, Mayfield is going to need on field reps. That is a definite. But he's quite possibly the best option they have at left guard. Let's just be honest here. Like, it which is not saying a whole lot. Like, it's Andrews has been a journeyman for a while, and Gossett has been.
He was the worst pass blocking guard starter last year. Right. So, you know.
So this may actually be the best option on the table. But again, if you consider that, then why are we just rolling with this?
Another wrinkle to that, I totally agree with you, Eric. We think about, Mayfield. We want him to play well now, but we care a whole lot more about the way he's playing in 2023, you know?
Right.
And we all remember Peter Kunz. Yep. We don't want to break the kid. I mean, he's going up against some of the best defensive tackles in the game back-to-back weeks. He probably is hopefully not paying too much attention to social media, but he definitely knows, what fans are saying.
His coach said it himself leading up to the game. Dude, you're going to get better pass.
You know, he's sitting in the film room as the whole team's watching the tape, on Monday morning, and he knows exactly what people are thinking. You know, I don't know Jalen Mayfield. I don't know the coaches. I don't know I don't have an answer for how you approach this from a mental standpoint.
Right.
The biggest thing for me is just not breaking the kid. I mean, I could never handle that kind of failure, I guess, in back-to-back weeks. They're going to have the Bucs if things go south. Again, and just all the ridicule, like he's a 23 year old kid. 20, I mean, he's
21. Yeah.
I care a whole lot more about 2023 Jalen Mayfield than who he is now. And we got to get the reps. Yes. But
at least after this week, he has a layoff, he's got, Leonard Williams.
Just Dexter Williams, Leonard Williams.
It's okay. I don't think he'll be starting week three, possibly.
It's Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence.
That's easy. Yeah. And then who does he get after that? Who is that?
The Washington.
Jonathan Allen.
John Payne and John Allen.
Yeah.
That'll be easier, right? Yeah.
Oh, the Jets are coming up soon. Yeah, all they have is who?
Right.
Just photocopy. Oh, great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least the Giants don't have great edge rushers, so maybe they can help out a little bit there.
When they go to Miami in a few weeks, he'll be fine. They have
except to make it to Miami. Yeah.
Christian Wilkins.
Yeah, but maybe Jalen Mayfield was gonna be that player who, wasn't good in training camp and got not many reps, and then he would just turn on when it comes to the regular season. That's just a gamer.
Odds of that happening is so low. It's not going to happen. Again, I want the kid to get on-field reps, and I understand that. I just want the team to have, as Andrew pointed out, if this kid takes these early season reps and mentally he's getting beaten down from it, what answer do they have? The only answer that they probably have at this point is, let's keep rolling him out there. He's going to get better at some point.
To his credit, Arthur Smith did mention that, he thinks that Jalen Mayfield is a very, very tough-minded individual. He made a point of emphasis to make that statement when asked about him. I don't think that any of this has been fair to Jalen Mayfield. From the very beginning, he was dealt a very, very rough hand. He comes in, he played right tackle in college, and he projects more as a guard in the NFL according to his ROI score, and that's completely fair. They drafted him as a guard. In training camp, they don't give him the left guard reps, they give him the right tackle reps. He doesn't get enough reps, and then he comes into the regular season facing Fletcher Cox and then Vita Vea right away. This kid was just set up for failure, in my opinion, from the very beginning. Especially someone who, we weren't really expecting when he was drafted, we weren't really expecting him to make that day one impact. He was a player for 2022 for next season. And, you know, he comes in game one. All right. Like, you know, you're thrown to the wolves essentially because the team didn't really address left guard at all. And except for with Josh Andrews, who, you know, he got hurt, but I don't think Josh Andrews would have been much better. So, yeah, definitely, like, with some perspective, Jalen Mayfield, like, he's getting it on social media and from the fan base.
Yeah.
But, you know, just keep some perspective that this really isn't his fault. Like, it's not his fault that he's in this position.
No,
yeah, it's really not bad for him. Like, really bad for him. It's one thing if he's you know, it's a veteran or someone who's like playing a position he's ever played before. Right. And yeah, it's just every detail about it. It just feels unfair to him. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. Not going to get a whole lot easier moving forward. But hope for his sake. I hope for Falcons Twitter's sake that
I'm more upset at how the team handled this than I am of Jalen Mayfield struggling because we kind of sort of knew this, but
I agree.
And all, like, this was a recipe for him to struggle. Like, everything came together for him to, like, you know, struggle, because of course he was gonna struggle in week one.
Exactly. Well, just remember, like, in the preseason, the first preseason game, that offensive line was an absolute disaster. Preseason week two, against arguably, I would say, a much better defensive line playing mostly starters, the same guys looked a lot better. So there's a chance that it could be better this week.
And then the Cleveland game came, and they just...
everybody was...
you know, Dahlman was taking the carries from Felipe Franks. That's how far in the backfield he was. Josh Rosen was running for his life. And again, they looked at that and say, all right, we're ready for Philly. Let's
good.
Go.
We're good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very rough for Mayfield, and the whole offensive line is going to have to grow up very, very fast. And it's unfortunate for them. But I mean, ideally it would have been like Mayfield would have been coming into this game at the same place Matt Hennessy was, you know, having a year to learn. Then getting, you know, maybe getting a couple of spot starts under his belt just to get used to it. Exactly. Then going into week one against an all-pro defensive tackle. No, it's like, okay, you've never played on the left before. You never played offensive. You never played guard before. That's fine. Just go in there and play against, like, one of the best defensive tackles.
Just throw him to the wolves.
If there's anybody that can relate to Jalen Mayfield right now, is Matt Hennessy. I mean, your first career start is against Chris Jones, and your second one is against Vita Vea. Like, it's good luck, kid. Go, you know, go do it. So, I hope. Honestly, in this situation, I hope Hennessy is probably pulling them to the side and saying, hey, I know it's tough for you, but, you know, we got to work our way out of this collectively as a team.
Yeah. They have to.
As a unit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Hennessy has his own struggles. Like, he, he was a 20 in the last game pass blocking grade. Right. Like, the only reason we're not mentioning that. The only reason we're not mentioning that is because Mayfield was like a one. So
this is only what, his fourth career start for Hennessy?
Yeah.
So he's not that far ahead of Jalen.
It's his third. He played. Yeah. I think he came in at left guard or something.
Yeah.
But
he's not that far ahead of Jalen right now.
Right. Yeah. Hey, and one good thing about the offensive line was they all consistently run blocked well, which is something we were not at all used to seeing ever. So I will give them credit for that. Even Mayfield, with his abysmal grade, was like an average run blocker. Hennessy was a good run blocker. McGarry was serviceable. Obviously, Chris Lindstrom was good.
And so that's not nothing because, you know, the threat and the use of play action in the future more and more will help negate some of those amazing pass rushes. We saw Arthur Smith, you know, use that in Tennessee beautifully the last couple of years. And, you know, he used play action a lot more than Dirk Koetter did last year, especially on the early downs, which was really nice to see. You know, that's one of the positives on the offense. But, yeah, the pass blocking has to be a lot better for that to be effective and for that to be put in use in the first place.
Yeah. I think Dirk Koetter will use play action when you're down 20-7 late in the fourth. Like, yeah, let's do it. Let's roll it out. Play action right now. Everybody knows you're not running the ball, dude.
All right.
Thank goodness for Chris Redemption, man. I mean, yeah. thank goodness he's a hit. I mean, yeah. you know, we're obvious. It's easier and it's you know to harp on the negatives, and then you know the negatives are more glaring right now. But you know, Lindstrom just very quietly being a real solid guard. Thank goodness for
that. And Jake Matthews. I'll never understand the Jake Matthews slander. Like, I'll never understand it. Like, this man is just out there on an island on the left side, next to like the worst left guard in the NFL, still getting it done. And people are still like, oh, why is he a captain? Like, shut up, you know, get out of here with that. But yeah, let me get to a couple of these tips before we transition into talking about our next murderer's row of defensive tackles we have to face. So yeah, George Costanza's question was more of a future oriented question. So let's say we were going into the bye at like 1-4, 0-5. Should Atlanta consider trading Grady? He says, consider, not that they should. Just considering, you know, him or other veterans potentially, since the season's probably lost at that point, would we be interested in that?
I don't think it would be possible given the salary cap.
Yeah, not Grady, I don't think.
Trading Grady, that would invoke minus $8 million on the cap. The team only has three. So just from a pure financial perspective, I don't think it can, like, it would literally not be possible to happen
under the salary cap. Translation, we're too broke to make that move.
Yeah. Basically. I think the one that could happen if they're really out of it is Deion Jones. I would have to look at his contract again since they restructured it again to see the details of that, to see if that's even feasible. But since they're going to have to decide between Foye and Deion at the end of this year, really, in terms of which one they want to keep around or give an extension to, that's the one I could see as being on the table if they're out of it. But
Even his play in the last couple of years has been like, okay, what's going on, man? Like, it's really inconsistent. Really inconsistent.
It's been more inconsistent, and I think a lot of that's been, you know, sort of the upheaval on the defense and that sort of thing. But you're absolutely right there that hasn't been as consistent as it was at sort of his peak.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, we got Brandon Brass with another $5. Thank you, Brandon. He says, you guys have talked about Spencer Rattler last time as a potential quarterback during the next year's draft. What are your guys' thoughts on Malik Willis? Love it. If the Falcons are picking in the top five, I would take Malik Willis without hesitation. But it's early, so you know we'll see if that sort of take holds up. But right now, Malik Willis is my favorite quarterback in next year's class. I doubt he'll end up being QB1, which might help the Falcons, but I love it. I don't know what you guys think about Malik Willis.
The one thing that concerns me, of course, level of competition.
Yep.
And his decision-making. He is a risk-taker when it comes to throws. And in many occasions on the college level, it's paid off.
Yeah.
But in the NFL, I don't know if it will. So those are the questions.
Maybe this franchise needs to take a risk once in a while, Eric. Have you considered that?
You're right about that.
You know, Malik Willis can run away from the pass rush, Eric, so...
Yeah, that's it worked out for Lamar Jackson on Monday, you know.
He can run away from the pass rush.
Yeah, because that's what this team needs, another mobile quarterback. That's the only way they're going to succeed in this league.
A contingent of the fan base has been saying that since Vic went away.
Yeah, they still want Cam Newton. They still want Cam Newton. Like, why? Do you guys not understand? Like,
he got cut before the season even started.
Come on, no.
Yeah, no.
If they sign Cam and he's got one of those helmets with the holes on top, he can grow his hair out, and that
someone said that. I can't remember who, but someone said that if he gets signed, he needs a helmet with a hole in it so he can wear his hair out like that.
Yeah,
that would be hilarious. I'd love to see that.
I would love to see that. That maybe we just go to that at some point just for the fun aspect, because maybe there's nothing else fun going on. But all right,
let's give it at least another few weeks before we like really go into draft talks.
I can't
take another like 5 months of just draft takes.
Straight draft takes immediately. Yeah.
Too late.
No, Eric already started doing mock drafts, guys. I already started.
Sorry. Week one pushed me there. It was week two last year. I made it to week two.
Yeah. You made it to week two last year. This year, not so much, but. All right, guys. Yeah, just a quick reminder to like and subscribe if you haven't done that already. We do appreciate that. And check out our Patreon page if you'd like to support the show on a monthly basis, get access to some exclusive content, exclusive perks. Link to that is patreon.com/FalcoholicLive. Check that out, guys. And again, thank you guys for all the tips. We'll continue getting to those as we move along in the show. But yeah, let's get to some Bucks talk because we're over an hour already, so we should probably talk about the Bucks game at least a little bit. Andrew, as our special guest, I'll go back to you. Do you have any hope in this game at all, or is it you just chalking it up already?
I mean, I have hope. I have some hope. Crazier things have happened. Not many of them, just a fool's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we all have that. That's why we're still here talking about. No, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I think. There are a few things that could turn in Atlanta's way, but it would be one of those situations where they all have to go right. I think we need to see a big change on pass protection. We need to see a lot more pressure from the defensive front. And I think if the offense does receive that, if Matt Ryan receives that extra time to sit back in the pocket without hearing alarm bells going off in his head, we can start to see Ridley blossom, start to see Kyle Pitts get his reps in. But, you know, I think it really just like, I mean, we've been harping on the trenches all night, and that we should be, because that's the issue right here. So like, if those areas show marked improvement, then I will feel a glimmer of hope. I want to see, you know, in the first quarter, if they're looking better in that respect, I'll start to get a little emotionally invested again. And otherwise I'll keep that all pushed very deep down. but yeah, the trenches, that's where it's at for me.
Yeah, no, the trenches are going to be key, and you know it's because the Bucks have a great offensive line. I don't believe they allowed a sack to the Cowboys. They may have allowed one, I can't remember, but they didn't allow much. And also, obviously, the defensive line, that interior of Vita Vea and Ndamukong-Suh, it's not any easier this week, certainly for the Falcons interior. Do I think they'll look better? Yes, but enough to keep this game respectable. That I don't know. And I think we saw, you know, when the Bucs took on the Cowboys, that the Buccaneers secondary, particularly now with the injuries they sustained, it's vulnerable. It's capable of being thrown on. But can they have enough time? And is the offense going to be ready to sort of execute more than one or two scripted drives without falling apart? That's kind of where I am. And then also, like, can the defense hold up against Tom Brady? And I think the answer is, like, probably not. But, you know, like, we're probably going to need it to be a shootout to win. But, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how that's going to turn out. Adnan, you know, what are your thoughts on this matchup at this point?
I actually think we'll surprisingly do a lot better than we did against Philadelphia. Well, one, we can't do any worse than what we just saw in week one.
So 7 points.
Yes. Hell yeah.
I think this is one of those, like, this will be one of those weird divisional games where, you know, it'll actually be close throughout. And, you know, I think the Bucks will pull away in the end. But last year, you know, the Bucks clearly a much, much better team than the Atlanta Falcons. You know, in all facets of the game, they were the Super Bowl champions. The Falcons had the fourth overall draft pick for a reason. The Falcons still played them very, very tough last year. I think in the first game we, you know, blew a 21-3 lead, which we're really good at doing against Tom Brady.
Never seen that before.
And and in the second game in Tampa Bay, week 17, you know, you'd think that they're just going to steamroll us. You know, and I think they needed that win for playoff positioning purposes.
Yeah.
The Falcons were actually within 3 points with 4 minutes left. They ended up losing by 17 because the Bucs scored a couple touchdowns after that. But, you know, it was a gritty back and forth affair. And I think we'll see something similar this week just because it's so weird. Like those division games, you can never predict them, no matter how you can't predict them confidently, no matter what the records are, no matter, you know, how good one team is playing, how poorly the other team is playing. I'm definitely not picking us to win. But, you know, I think we'll keep it close and we'll come away with some positives to build off of, you know, leading into the games to come after this game. So, you know, that's my prediction for this game.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's totally fair. I mean, Eric, I'll let you get a crack at it too. You know, what are you kind of feeling going into this? Just yet another set of murderers row, really, of defensive linemen
just
for the Falcons.
Piggybacking off Andrew's point, you know, this is going to be a game where they're going to need a big player too in all three phases. You know, like Matt Ryan and offense is not going to win this thing by itself.
they're probably going to need a defensive score, which would definitely help. A special team score may change the momentum. Hell, if they can get a Cordero Patterson kickoff return for a touchdown, that may you know, put some life in the team. We'll see. But, you know, I honestly believe in this one, you know, they're going to struggle. They're going to make a few plays here and there. I'm going to question it, but I'm going to also believe in it in the same time that that Arthur Smith and the coaching staff is going to make the necessary adjustments. They're not just going to roll out next week with a similar game plan. They're going to make necessary tweaks here and there. But in order for this game to really be competitive, in my opinion, like I said, they're going to have to get big plays in all three phases, and we'll see. But I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Evan, go to you next. What are you feeling as we head into week two here?
I mean, honestly, in my mind, it's already going to be a loss. Like, I'm not even flirting with the idea that they could win. What I'd like to see is them being competitive and actually showing that they kind of belong on the same field as a team this good, which I'm not sure is going to actually happen based on what I saw this past weekend.
Right.
I don't have a lot of confidence going in. I had a lot of confidence going into week one, to be honest, because I was kind of hopeful, I think, like everyone else.
Yeah.
But based off of what we saw in week one, I mean, there's no reason for me to feel anything but like, I'm going to watch the game, but like, I'm not expecting them to even get close to winning. Would I love to see them like come out and smack Tom Brady and the Buccaneers on their home field? Yeah, obviously. I'm
open to that. Yeah.
Right. Tom Brady, by the way, is 9-0 against the Falcons in his career.
Would a win change anything for you guys?
If we win, I'm already writing up the playoff scenario. 16-1.
See, for me, they don't even have to win. If they look like they could compete with them, like if they lose because of like what the Cowboys did, like Cowboys fans after that game shouldn't have felt bad. Like they played them well. A few calls here, you know, you could question the Chris Godwin possible OPI that a lot of people were split on. I mean, you could say, well, if that didn't happen, you know, there was a chance we won. Like they took them to the wire.
Yeah.
If the Falcons do something similar like that, hell yeah, I'm coming away like, okay, this team is better than we thought. I don't understand the Eagles game at all, but they're better than we thought. I just don't see that happening.
Man, like, we were 2-6 last year when I was trying to come up with playoff scenarios. And we beat Tom Brady in week two.
Yeah, I'm 100% back in then. Yeah.
What about you? What about you, Andrew? Does a win change anything for you, or does it change anything for the team as far as, you know, their perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be looking to see who they can draft 30th overall next spring if they win this game.
Hell yeah.
No, I mean, well, one other thing I just remembered, you know, Dean Pease knows Tom Brady very well.
Right, yeah.
They won a lot of games together in New England.
Yeah.
If they do come out with a victory, I think it's the kind of win that can springboard them into a nice little run, not necessarily a big winning streak, but especially when you think about the organization getting used to a new regime. To after having one of the worst opening days in franchise history over half a century, to beat Tom Brady, our big nemesis from the Super Bowl and / division rival, coming off their own Super Bowl. That to me, it's not so much what it would mean for their record. It would just mean be just sending them on a trajectory that would instill confidence from the players, the coaches, if a lot of young players, like if Kyle Pitts has a big game or if Jalen Hawkins has a big pick, you know, something like that, just to really kind of wash away the stink of last week.
Arthur Smith, he'd be allowed to stick his chest out a little bit, right?
Yeah.
First career win.
Yeah. Against Tom Brady and the Bucks. Yeah.
And I will say, I'm not saying that like we're not going to win this game. However, just hear me out. If it somehow does happen, let me just read you off the quarterbacks that this team will be facing after this Bucs game. So, you know, you have Daniel Jones and the Giants next week. Hold on, just hear me out. Saquon Barkley is not going to be at 100%. You know, we already know they're going to ramp him up. You know, then you have Tyler Heinicke in Washington. Ryan Fitzpatrick is out.
Maybe RG3.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know. Then you have Zach Wilson, a rookie quarterback in the Jets. Then you have a bye week. And after the bye, you play Tua. And then Sam Darnold. And then, you know, then you get the Saints and then Dan Quinn's defense after that. I'm just saying, like, a win would be a nice little springboard where, you know, maybe.
Playoffs? You talking playoffs?
Kevin, stop it. He's doing it again. He did this last year.
He's doing it again. Yes.
Oh, you give me enough time. I can play out the scenarios in my head right now.
So last year, Andrew, when they were 1-6, and they went into, I think it was the Broncos game.
Okay.
They won. They became 2-6. The very next show, Adnan was thinking about playoff scenarios. He was
in
like,
my defense.
If this team loses.
The defense, I mean, the division was not looking great at the time.
Let me add some context. The NFL was talking about adding another wild card team.
We were only one or two games out. Yeah.
The Falcons were like a half game out of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were playing Taysom Hill twice. Drew Brees was on IR. And I was like, oh, we'll be Taysom Hill twice. You know, that's no issue. And, you know, we'll beat the Raiders too. And then.
Kevin and I was like, it's their second win of the year. Why are we talking the playoffs already?
He was ready, man. Yep.
He was ready.
All they need to do is give me a crumb, and I'm buying all the way back in. That's all I need.
Look at the Braves this year.
Yeah, there you go.
Braves.
Hey, it's possible, right? It's possible. Yeah.
Oh boy.
No, that's a dark timeline. Let's hope we don't have to get to 1-6 where we're like trying to, you know, galaxy brain playoff scenarios this year. But
He's got that article already.
He's got
ready. It's already typed up. It's in draft right now.
He's ready.
I just need to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. We'll just, you know, change some of the dates, some of the teams, but he's got it ready to go every season. Yeah. But no, I mean, I think it's very unlikely that the Falcons win this game, but I think it's also likely that they will play better than people are sort of expecting. I don't think they're going to win, but I think if they came out and were like competitive with the Bucks through the whole game and it was like somewhat close at the end, it wouldn't shock me. I think it's probably more likely that they play. I mean, I think they're going to play better than week one. If they don't, I think we have a lot to worry about.
If they don't, then next week, if people thought this week was bad on Falcons Twitter, if they look that bad, it's going to be terrible next week.
Yeah, it'll
be hilarious.
It'll be terrible for the players.
Yeah,
yeah. By hilarious, I mean, you know, crying in the corner hilarious. But it's going to be a rough game. The schedule makers did them no favors in terms of having this one on the docket in week two. They're probably staring down 0-2, but you know, for those of us that predicted them to go around 500, an 0-2 start isn't really moving the needle for me. If you were thinking that they were going to win more than 9 games, probably want to adjust that lower if they start 0-2. But, you know, we'll see. See how it goes.
I don't know why this, like, meme just popped in my head, but if they, like, what Adnan was saying about Falcons Twitter next week, I'm thinking of, like, you know, the players too, but the new digital team that they have there. It's like, it reminds me of that meme of the guy with the noose around his neck that's like, first time or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we're used to it. We're like, oh, yeah, first time with this.
First time?
First time.
Yeah, they have no idea what they're getting themselves into.
No, get ugly. Nope.
Yeah. Yep. All right, guys. Well, any final thoughts about the Bucks game before we start wrapping this thing up?
Good luck.
I would not pick them straight up, but I would pick them against the spread.
What is the spread?
13.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Probably. I think I'd bet on the Falcons to lose by less than 13. It's a division game. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not actually putting money on it.
I would never put money on the Falcons.
Why? Why?
Oh, never. Never, absolutely not.
If he was a gambler, which he's not, I wouldn't bet on the Falcons either. They'd just break your heart. I would bet on teams I didn't care about, because then I would, I know the emotion wouldn't play a part in it, you know.
I don't even want to make that pick on Tally site. I don't even want to do it there, let alone put some money down on it. Like, I don't know. I'm good. I'll stay away from that.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, let me read off our final couple of donations here before we wrap things up. Before I get to that, guys, reminder, please do like and subscribe to the channel if you haven't done it already. We really appreciate those metrics. They help us out a lot. Check out the Patreon page if you want to support the show on a monthly basis, get access to some exclusive perks and content, that sort of stuff. The link to that is patreon.com/falcoholiclive. So first off, we got Corey Carter with the $5. He says, Falcons fans get it the worst. Falcons players come and go, make that money, but the fans stay for free.
He's yep, not
that's
wrong.
Our curse. That's our curse. Yeah.
I mean, we pay, but in
We pay
non-monetary ways.
Yeah, it's more like a blood contract sort of thing. Dave Cho is very familiar with these.
But, yes.
Then we got Jason Gaines with the $2. He says, like to see running back Wayne Gallman get some opportunities. He did a good job filling in for Saquon Barkley last year. Reliable receiving option as well. Also, great to see Dan Quinton's Cowboys defense choke. History repeats itself. Yeah, I mean, I think we all knew where that one was going.
They just lost DeMarcus Lawrence today, too, foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So that defense is going to be... Like that defense is already going to be bad. It's going
to
be real.
Going back to the point that one of you guys brought up earlier, they had the Cowboys had zero sacks and only two quarterback hits against Brady, and now they just lost their best pass rusher.
Yeah. It's rough.
But I thought I saw that he may be back by November or something, which is just in time.
It's possible. Just in time for the Falcons. Yeah.
In that division, you know. So
that Bucs offensive line is going to be brimming with confidence. You know, game one against Dan Quinn's defense, game two against the Falcons.
Yep.
Like they're going to have zero sacks allowed like through the first 2 weeks.
Yep. The Falcons will probably steal one sack off a blitz. They managed to do that against Philly, I think. So. All right. So we got finally.
Brady should have had one on that fourth down, but
yeah, he should have. Yeah. From George Costanza, final one, $3. Thank you again, George. Of course, he wants to know what you're drinking tonight, Adnan.
I had this before. It's the Vita. It's water with the citrusy powder. Very. It's European. It's very good.
European. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. fizzy orange drink.
Yes. Very good. Good stuff. He says also Braves 2021 World Series champions, heard it here first. Who would have thought Joe Peterson was the key acquisition?
Peterson.
Oh, is it Jock? Oh, I must. He must have spelled it wrong. Yeah, I don't know anything about baseball, so I could not tell you.
George, I'm not picking the Braves to win the World Series this year. Maybe next year. You know, when we have Acuña back. But you know, the Braves have been fun. They're gonna bridge the gap until Hawks season for me, because you know God knows the Falcons won't be doing it.
Yeah, let's maybe the Falcons. If the Falcons could just be watchable, like if they could score, you know, 20 plus points, and we could see Kyle Pitts look good, and we could, like, you know, the offense could be like functional. That would be better. It'd be like, oh, okay, I could like, you know, put up a fight against the Bucks. That'd be like decent football. But when they're getting like their, you know, butts kicked to the tune of 32-6, it's like, okay, like I don't even need to be involved with this transaction, so let's just hope.
And
less than
I was gonna say, I do think there was another donation earlier asking something about Wayne Gallman.
Yeah I got it. I just read it. I thought he wanted to get some carries. He filled in for Saquon Barkley. I mean, I like Wayne Gallman.
I like what Cordero brought to the field for him last week, though. So I don't know if I agree. Wayne Gallman should get some looks, but Cordero brought a nice little wrinkle to the offense last week.
Yeah,
and I want to see where that goes.
Yeah, he looked honestly like one of the best players on offense. He looked decisive running the ball, which is not something I really saw from him much in Chicago.
His pass blocking was very good too.
Yeah. I mean, he's huge. Like, you know, I think he has potential to be kind of a unique player.
A unique third down option. That's a unique third down option.
And I definitely, I think that Gallman didn't play because he was just signed.
Yeah.
So I think he's still getting the playbook down. I think he will be activated this week. And I'm telling you, the longer we go, the more and more I think that this team will go toward a committee approach. Gallman, Davis, and Cordero Patterson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Agree with you there. All right, and we got last donation, $3 from Ulysses Ventura. I think the Bucks come in overconfident, and therefore we may have a chance. Yeah, I mean, that's a total option. The Bucks were kind of uncharacteristically sloppy last week. I think they had 4 turnovers. So, you know, that sort of game script could certainly help the Falcons. It didn't stop the Bucks from still winning against the Cowboys.
And Brady still threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. Like, I don't care about the turnovers. Brady, I know, still.
Where I wouldn't be feeling great if I was a Cowboys fan, because we got 4 turnovers off the Bucks and still lost. Like,
and still lost.
Yeah, that game was probably not as close as it appeared.
It would have been a massacre if they didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah,
Brady might have set some type of season opening record or something like that. It would have been worse.
It probably would have been worse. Yep. All right. Well, before we get out of here, I want to thank all of my wonderful co-hosts and guests. First of all, our special guest, Andrew Hirsch. He is at Andrew Hirsch on Twitter. Andrew, anything you're working on? Anything you want to let the people know about?
No. Right now, you know, I'm happy to be here chatting with you guys. Would love to come back. Appreciate you know, the opportunity here. You know, was working in football before. I'm trying to be a little more active on Twitter now with football season ramping up. So look forward to chatting with you guys over there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back on, man. Had to work out a time where Dave can be here too, for sure.
I know, man. He's got to jiggle that antenna.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to get those moose out there to get that internet back up.
Yeah, it's getting cold up where Dave is. Like, it's September. I think it's like 25 up there now.
Yeah. Yeah, he was sending us something today about killer muskrats or weasels or something. That they hunt porcupines.
That's a New Hampshire state animal.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds wild, man. That's crazy.
Dave does not help. Like, he doesn't help himself, like, fight this narrative that he just, like, lives in the wilderness up there.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, no, this, like, huge weasel came in my yard, and, like, you know, while I was running today or something. It's like, yeah, they just hunt porcupines for fun or something.
Yeah, just, like, casually, like, saying that. Like, bro, like, I don't remember ever, like, seeing a porcupine down here.
No, I've never even seen a porcupine, much less a weasel capable of taking down a porcupine. Yeah,
in civilization where we live.
Yeah. You're in civilization, yeah. All right, well, thanks again, Andrew, and yeah, we'll absolutely have you back on as the season goes forward. Also with us tonight, we had Adnan Ekic at Say Which Way on the Twitters. Adnan, anything you'd like to plug?
Yes, check out on Saturday. I write an article every week detailing the series history between the Falcons and their opponent, and I write up an article looking at the scenarios of what happens if we win, what happens if we lose, and I have Fantasy Stud and Dud going every Monday, so check that out.
Yeah, yep, definitely check that out, guys, for sure. Also with us tonight, Eric Robinson. He is on Twitter at ESPN Eric. Oh, I'm sorry, it's at _ Eric _ Robinson. Eric, anything that you're working on, either at ESPN or otherwise, that you'd like to plug?
Really, Kevin?
Yeah, I had to get at least one in there.
Yeah. All right, okay. Yeah, be on the lookout for upcoming articles. One big question that the Falcons are facing this week, as well as the game preview for Sunday's bloodbath against the Bucks. Yep. Yeah, be on the lookout for that.
Eric, will you make us pay for the paywall when you start writing up articles on ESPN? Is it like all going to be on ESPN Plus?
Guys, let's not do this.
They're gonna make us go through a person to get Eric to come.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be
Gonna be harder to get Eric than it is, like, yeah, you know, Matt Ryan.
Yep.
Oh, let's not do this, man. It was torture, man. It's been torture the past couple of days because I had to watch Eagles highlights a lot.
So sorry. All right. Finally, we have Director of Guest Personnel, Evan Birchfield, at the very easy to remember, at Evan Birchfield. Evan, I know you have a very special guest lined up for us for next week's show.
Oh,
Did you want to drop the bomb for those loyal fans that have stayed this late so they get a sneak peek in here?
You know, to continue the special teams tradition, Matt Bryant is coming on.
Yes, legendary Falcons kicker Matt Bryant will be joining us next week.
Kicker in franchise history.
Hey, folks, unfortunately, my computer ended up crashing right at the end of the show, so you didn't get to hear the very final few outros, but just gonna remind you to please like and subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. We really appreciate those metrics. And then you could check out our Patreon page if you want to support the show on a monthly basis, get access to some exclusive perks and more there. And finally, check out our post-game show immediately following the game on Sunday. Those are a lot of fun, win or lose, so hang out with us there. Thanks again for tuning into the Falcoholic Live, and we'll see you on Sunday.